ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय गते दुर्वाससि सोम परिशो विजो भयो गति पवित्रम् अहरत् ऋषेर् विमोक्षम् व्यसनम् च विच्या मेने स्वा वीर्यम् च परानुभावम् गथेत दुर्वाससि सोम हरिशो विजो भयो गाति पवित्रम् अर्हरत् ऋष्यर्विमोक्षम् व्यसनम् च वीक्ष्य मेने स्ववीर्यम् च परानुभावम् गते on his return. Atha, then, Durvasasi, the great mystic yogi, Durvasa, sa, he, the king, Ambarisha, Maharaj Ambarisha, Dvija Upa Yoga, most suitable for a pure Brahmana. Atipavitram, very pure food. Aharat, gave him to eat, and he also ate. Rishe, of the great sage. Vimoksham, release. Vyasanam, from the great danger of being burned by the Sudarshan chakra. Cha, and Vikshya, sing. Mene, considered. Svaviryam, about his own power. Cha, also. Para anubhavam, because of his pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Translation. Durvasa Muni had left the place of Maharaj Ambarish, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmana, Durvasa, had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. Purport. A devotee like Maharaj Ambarisha is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of dangers that one has to meet. But a devotee, because of his full dependence upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarisha. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And in the course of those duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. But the king tolerated everything, patiently depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart, sarvasya chaham mahirisani vishtah, and he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarisha was faced with many disturbances, The Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarisha became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of Bhakti Yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of Bhakti Yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Yoginam apisarvesham madgatan antaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mata. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. This is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarisha with Durvasa Muni. So here we see where the Srimad Bhagavatam then makes itself special or unique amongst all the Vedic literatures and all the histories, in that after explaining the story, you know, because that's what attracts our attention, is the story. So after explaining the story of Ambarish Maharaj, now it's going back and pointing out the details of the story. But these details aren't just on what are the material, rules and regulations. What's the Dharma? What is the mundane necessities of human life that makes human society? But it is pointing out the devotional aspects. It is understood, someone who is studying the Bhagavatam seriously, then they understand these others, or at least are acquainted with these others. So the duties of a king, the duties of the Brahman, the duties of their interaction, you know, all these things are, one is acquainted with. It doesn't have to be explained, unless there's some essential point. But here, then, so those aren't worked in. Otherwise, it would have been worked in all the nice little things that he was supposed to have done, and how he received him, washed his feet, and offered his arjya, and did all different things, and how he served, and what kind of things. No, those things are understood. This is the literature for those interested in self-realization. So the mundane aspects are enough to hold the story together, but not more. Then we see after that now it is explaining his attitude, which is the essential point to be learned here. It means it's a story. Story is the medium. By the story we can understand. So the story must be told. But what is the purpose of that story? It's not just to entertain us, but it is to learn a valuable lesson. That devotees, in the performance of their duties, and in any duties in the material world, there's problem. That is guaranteed. There's no such thing as duties with no problem. If we think that there is such a thing, then we're in the wrong place. We should be in the spiritual realm. Here, there's problem. Guaranteed. 100%. There's no such thing as no problem. Of course, when we discuss things of this world, because problems aren't what we want, and basically, unconsciously, we accept that the material world means problems. Therefore, we talk about the good. Oh yes, you go to this place, it's really nice, you know, the great beach, nice sun, nice wind, great sand, all these different things. They don't talk about other things. Yeah, there's storms, and then you got to watch out for the guys, they're going to steal your car out the front, and you know, if you leave anything in your room, then somebody steals that, and then, you know, all the other guys trying to take advantage of you and take all your money away. No, nobody talks about that. Because if we talked about these things, people would lose their inspiration to work. Right? In the Vedic culture, even though the world's like this, people are inspired to work because there's something beyond. Right? In sinful life, you work for the present. So therefore, you have to work on what you're going to get right now. Right? But it's future. Okay, it'll be after a little bit. Maybe not immediately after, but it's after. You'll get. Now is a problem, but if you do this, you go here, you go there, you do this, you do that, you'll get something, you'll be happy. But in the Vedic, they take it farther. Why this life? What you'll get in next life? Then you'll get so much. Right?
Or you'll get out of this place, you'll be in the Brahman, you'll be happy there. But these are all temporary solutions. The real solution is going back to Godhead. So then this story is then pointing out that in this world, whatever your duties are is going to be a problem. Therefore, you choose your duties according to what problems you like. You can tolerate. Right? If you can't tolerate, you know, screaming kids and this and that and paying all the bills, don't get married, because that's the problem. If you can tolerate that, that's not for you a big major problem. Other things are problems. Then you get married. If you can tolerate the difficulties in management, and you do it. You can't tolerate, don't do it. You can't pick and choose. The world doesn't work like that. I'll take this good thing here. I'll leave the bad thing of that thing. And I'll take the good thing here. This is what Krishna means about doing your own duty. You may do the other person's duty perfectly, but it's not perfect because you're avoiding what's wrong in that duty. You only want to take out of it what you like. Right? You just want the authority or the power, the facility, the sense gratification, the respect, but you don't want what goes along with it. You know, like I was just hearing the other day, one of the mats down the road here, not Gaudiya mat, just some outside, you know, Upper Sampradaya mat. So the man lives there in his mat, he's the mat head, with his wife, right? And when he's in the mat, then he, you know, wears whatever. When he goes out from the mat to go collecting, he puts on saffron. Right? And he collects all his money and all that, and then he brings it back and he manages his mat. So his mat's his house and that. But, you know, being kind of interested in pious and devotional things, and therefore he's made his devotional activities into a business. So he wants to be able to get the collection and all those things that he would give someone who is dressed in saffron. But at the same time, he wants the facilities of being a householder. So this is what Krishna is talking about. You want the facility of one, you don't want the grihastha, then yes, he needs to work, he has to do something that people recognize as valuable. They know you work, they value it, they give you money, or in some way you collect money. Brahmacharya, sannyasi goes, it's the saffron, they understand, okay, that's just that. They don't even know you, they'll give you money. So he wants that. He wants the easy money, and he wants the easy life, you know. So this is cheating, this is sinful. This is nonsense. So we see from here, Gurvasa is talking about, this is real. He is doing the duties, he's accepted the duties. He's accepted the duty of pleasing a guest. Right? He's accepted that, and he wasn't able to please. Durvasa was not pleased, so Durvasa went out traveling, running around the universe, every year, like that. And so then he came back after a year, and he was still waiting to please his guest. Because until the guest is pleased, the grihastha doesn't eat. First are the guests, then other respectable people in the family, this and that, then the women and children, the servants, the women and children, all that. Last, then, the husband and wife, they eat. That's the system. So he's not going to eat until everybody else in the family and dependents have been fed. So he's performing that, but he's willing to accept the difficulties. So now, then in that, so that's pointed out here by this story. But that's not actually the main point. That is one side of it. That is one side. That is the side that, you know, keeps us, you know, how you say, just in the performance of duties, material world is difficult. And so then here he's very religious, very proper, he's done his activities properly. The main point is then how he gets over that. The Lord being in the heart, it's his pastime, he will arrange it how he likes. He will make some wonderful arrangement so that the devotee will be saved, the devotee will be protected, and everything will come out very nicely. So now, in doing this, he's offering prayers, just like anybody would offer prayers. If you want to save a family member or a friend or something, you offer your prayers. And Sudarshan Chakra is the most powerful of all weapons. All movement is him. He is time, he is knowledge, he is everything. And then, by those prayers, he releases the Brahman. So then, one could see that there is potency there. Right? The Brahman tried to curse him. It didn't work. Sudarshan destroyed the demon. Then Sudarshan chased the Muni around the universe. Then the Muni, you know, didn't get out of it. Okay, he went out, he ran around the universe, and this way, you know, he got away from Sudarshan Chakra and all that, okay. No, he went around the universe, didn't get away. He even went to Vishnu, didn't get away. He's come back to the devotee. The devotee offers prayers, then Sudarshan goes away. So then he understands potency is there, there's power is there. The devotee has been invested with power by the Lord. But he does not become proud. So that's the essential point, is that he is able to do wonderful things on behalf of the Lord, but he's not proud of that. So then two things are there. One is what Durvasa is to learn, that the devotees are powerful. They're invested with power by the Lord. These things are happening. It's nothing mundane. You don't take a bunch of, a ragtag bunch of, you know, hippies, and they go and speak to the topmost people in countries and influential people in society and establish the movement all over the world. This is not a mundane arrangement. This is not because of the material qualifications of those people. This is because of their spiritual dedication and the blessings that they are getting from Guru and Krishna. So then, they are powerful. That's to be acknowledged. Just as Durvasa had to acknowledge that more powerful than even Vishnu is the desire of the devotees. Because the devoted Lord wants to interact with his devotees. So their pleasure is his pleasure. That is affection. That is service. If it's the nature of the soul to serve, then that service has to be present in the Supreme Lord. It is his nature also. Right? Otherwise, all of our qualities are coming from his qualities. The Prabhupada says, if we like to fight, it's because the Lord likes to fight. You know, we like to have relationships because he likes to have. So we can understand that he also likes to serve. So that has to be understood from one side. And then from the other side is the devotees who have done these wonderful activities, whatever it is, however small or big. They must realize that it's not me, it's the Lord's potency. Somehow or another, through us as an instrument, we have been engaged. But it's not us, it's the Lord's potency. Because Vishnu wanted it like this, therefore when Durvasa Ambarish offered the prayers, then Sudarshan was satisfied. So he's satisfied when the Lord's satisfied. And the Lord's satisfied when the devotee's satisfied. So we can see is that therefore it's there, but it's the Lord's arrangement, not our arrangement. We didn't arrange that the pleasure of the devotees is one success. Pleasing Guru Krishna, the Vaishnavas, by pleasing the Vaishnavas, that is success. That's Krishna's arrangement. So therefore, if we're pleased, therefore Krishna's pleased, therefore the other person gets blessed, that's because of Krishna's arrangement, not our arrangement. So we have to be able to accommodate both these contradictory sides. The one is Durvasa is seeing, Ambarisha is powerful. And Ambarisha is saying, I'm not powerful, actually it's the Lord. By His grace it is happening. When we can understand these two, then devotional service, you know, becomes very easy. Then we can do something wonderful. We talk about doing something wonderful, big, this, that. But unless this is understood, how we'll do something big? We ourselves will become proud. Even when we're doing something big, someone else will just say, ah, it's mundane, ah, it's just this, ah, it's just that, it's just politics, it's just this, it's just so many things. So we have to understand, no, the Lord is taking part, the Lord's doing all these things. We have to not forget, we have to remember. Self-realization means remembering all these things, remembering who we are. Remember who God is, right? Remember what is this material energy. Then it becomes good. So this lesson is what is being pointed out here by this in this particular section. Is by the pleasure of the Lord, then through the medium of the devotee, then we get the blessings of the Lord. But that devotee never thinks he is the cause of that. He understands it's the Lord's the cause. So if he understands it's the Lord, everybody else understands it's him. So this, when this is there, then we can interact with others.
because then we appreciate what another devotee can do or has done. And we understand if we have been involved as an instrument in anything, then we know it's by the grace of, you know, Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Then the whole society, we appreciate others and we're humble ourselves. Then you can have very nice, proper social interaction. And you see, from this, then Durvasa, you know, he's been insulted, at least in his own mind, but he is very satisfied with Ambarish. And Ambarish, though he has been unjustly dealt with, he is satisfied, they are best of friends. So we see it's a different category. It's not like what we think of as mundane justice, where justice should be done, justice this, justice that. Here, Ambarish, you know, could go the rest of his life, yeah, that guy. Because we see so many other kings are like that. Like that. When, what was it, Uta? Uttanka, when he went to the king, he was asked by his guru's wife for Guru Dakshin after he graduated to get the earrings from the queen. And so then he went to the queen to get these earrings. And since he was there and he was so powerful and pure, then the king thought, how it's so rare to get someone of this qualification to perform the Shudra rites. Because only very pure people can perform the Shudra rites. Just any old person won't do. They have to be very, very pure. So therefore then he said, will you do this, accept the Shraddha Patra? So he said yes. So what he brought was unqualified. It was dirty, it was cold, there were hair in it. So then he wouldn't accept it. The king cursed him. And so he cursed the king back. And then the king said, oh, I'm sorry. Because afterwards he understood he was wrong. Yes, it was cold. And there was hair, it was unqualified, not good. So he said, you please remove your curse. So the Brahmin removed his curse. And then the Brahmin said, you please remove your curse. He says, I'm sorry, I can't. It's a Kshatriya, you know, passion runs very deep. You know, anger, all these things, I can't forgive. Right? And this, he was completely wrong. There was not one, you know, nanometer of space for that king to stand on that he was right in any way, according to any Dharma Shastra. He was 101% wrong. But because it had come in such a way that he got offended in the process, he couldn't forgive. So, and so many examples are like this, the passion of kings. But here, Maharaj Ambarish, he's doing his fast, it's none of Durvasa's business. Right, he comes in there, messes the whole thing up, you know. But then he waits for him, and then he greets him, and he offers his obeisances, feeds him, and we don't hear of anything. Ambarish, after he leaves, and he doesn't turn to his ministers and goes, "This guy," you know, doesn't. You don't hear of it because these are devotees. These are devotees. So devotees are beyond the brahminical platform. They are able to go beyond. So therefore, we don't see that. He is simply working in this way. So it's on another realm. Justice doesn't come into this. What's right, what's wrong is what is devotionally proper. Now, from this, real justice is what? That we're established as correct? That our activity that I did was perfect? Or that Krishna is correct? His devotional service is perfect? And the whole process of devotional service is the best? Now, which of these two is, we go on and, you know, an atheistic idea of justice? Or a slightly dovetailed idea of justice? Mundane, but okay, touch to the Lord because it's the Lord's rules on justice? Or what is devotional service? Durvasa Muni, he's a yogi. He's gone away singing the glories of devotional service and devotees. He's made best friends with the devotee. And the devotee is feeling very humble and very, you know, close to the Lord because the Lord has engaged him in this way, in this pastime. So now, is that justice? Or is it that he should have gotten dirty? Should he have at least in one sentence put in, you know, you are wrong for doing that? Just one, get it in there. He just had to say it. No, you don't hear about it. So therefore, there's a whole other realm when we think of what is right and wrong in this world. Right means what brings us closer to Krishna. Wrong means what takes us away. So if seeming material right takes us away from Krishna, it's wrong. And if seeming material wrong takes us to Krishna, it's right.
So you have to see what brings about Krishna consciousness. That is what must be seen. Because in the material world, it's all nasty. The material world means nasty. Of course, there's pious nasty, and there's impious nasty. But the ultimate is what is Krishna conscious. Any questions or comments?
What was the curse you was the morning exactly? How the curse? What was that curse? And then should die or something?
The curse wasn't so much, I think that means indirectly it would be die. He took a mat of his one of the jops of his hair, and then throwing that on the ground, and it turns into a demon. It's a standard, you know, tantric kind of thing. Shiva also, when he did the Daksha Yajna, that's how he made Virabhadra. Also the same one. So it's a standard medium for manifesting demons, right? If they're not into that, they're more into the ideas of that, and they'll do it through, like Toshka did, you know. Then he did it through the yajna, like that. But it's just so he made the demon who would kill Ambarish, like that. Then Sudarshan Chakra manifested at that time, killed that fiery demon, and then not only that, then started to chase Durvasamuni. Because another thing happened another time. I forget the name, but the king of Kashi also sent some big demon to go bother somebody. Yeah, and so then it came there, and when it got there, then Sudarshan came out, and then the demon thought, well, this doesn't look right. So the demon went back and killed the king, and then Sudarshan came, and then, you know, destroyed his, you know, all the nice things of the kingdom. You know, because all those things, they become proud of. Very beautiful city, beautiful palaces, parks, this, that, and become very proud. So he destroyed all those things. You know? So the general principle is that if something, I think that was in, yeah, that was in the last chapter, is that if ill will is put onto a devotee, it won't affect the devotee. It'll actually affect the person who's the cause of that ill will. Because the devotee is under the Lord's protection. So even if something happens, it's not really going to, it's not going to bother their Krishna consciousness. It's only going to be a cause for increasing their Krishna consciousness. So it may externally appear that something's happened to them, or it may externally not happen, like here with Ambarish Maharaj. Nothing happened. But at the same time, it is the person who's been the cause of that, improper dealings, they will get a reaction like that. Whether it works out nice for the person or not, they'll get a reaction like that. So that was a point that was made in the end of the last chapter, is that feeling bad towards devotees won't really hurt the devotees, it'll hurt us, you know. Yes?
Okay, these demons are created, do they have independent consciousness? Are they spirit soul, the spirit soul enters that bodily manifestation?
Yes, it means, see, is that there's unlimited living entities and they're all looking for a place to stay. You know? So then, as soon as you create a place, then a soul will come. You know, who has the qualifications to be in that place? So Durvasa, by his potency, can create that form of the demon. And because of his consciousness at the time of creating that demon, it will attract that kind of soul. Yes.
Will that soul... What will be the effects of the souls of a soul to be healed by Sudarshan?
I guess he would get liberated, yeah. At least. Or he may go to Vaikuntha. Like that. So for that demon, it was quite good. And Durvasa then learned about devotional service from it.
So they said that this Vaishnava apparat is so powerful that if someone commits this apparat, then the whole village that the person lives in is destroyed. Yeah. It looks like it's not like injustice, because someone else in the village is happening. be unfortunate to live in the same room as someone who's committed an aparad. Can you explain what's really going on there?
Yeah, it means that you will naturally associate with those of like-minded persons. So therefore, you chose to be in that place where such a person is there. It's not just the individual, it's the leader. It means if you have one person in the community, there's just one of the residents performs something, it'll come to them. Though it may affect also those around, it'll affect their family, affect, you know, like this. And depending on how it goes, it can expand. But if it's the leader, then definitely that will affect the whole place. Because we see is many times is if someone doesn't agree with the leadership and that, then they'll shift from that. They find that they're impious or this or that. If it's a matter of, it doesn't matter. Like Lord Chaitanya and Namadvip, they weren't bothering their religious activities, the Mohammedan government. So therefore there was no need to shift. Because anyway, where would they go? The whole India was under their control. But as long as they weren't bothering, it's there. But if one can see as the improper behavior towards the devotees, you know, or that, then one may be inspired to go somewhere where one finds it's better, or work to try to correct it. But otherwise, another example would be a small fire, you know, in one tree, in the hollow of one tree, can burn down the whole forest. So therefore, one bad person in a family can destroy the whole family. Like that. You know, it's a popular theme amongst Western, you know, dramatists and story writers. Anything else?
You're talking about feeding the guests.
Means I was just a general. Means the first of the guests is the atiti. Means, you know, some you know, superior person who's not you know, a relative or like that. You know, a Brahmin who has come and is not uninvited like that. They're always first. After that would be any senior members of the family like that. Then after that you would take care of, you know, the whatever it is, pregnant women, children, like this, those who are taking care of, that kind of thing. Then last would be the servants, right, of that group. Then after that, then the husband and wife, they would sit and eat. If there's some intimate friends, close friends, those close friends could sit and eat at that time. So it's a very common thing, let's say. The devotees will be invited to someone's house. So at that house also is the person's friend. So the friends and other, they don't sit with the devotees and eat. Sometimes if there's this very senior member of the family, like a grandfather or some other, you know, respectable relative, and that, they'll sit and eat with the devotees. But otherwise not. The family and the friends of the family, they'll all help taking care, serving prasad, like that. And then when it's finished, then they'll all sit and eat, like that. Now, feeding the servants doesn't mean you sit down and serve. This, their portion is set aside. It doesn't necessarily mean that they serve them. It's just that, in other words, if there's any shortage of food, the householder himself, it will be short for them. Right? It won't be the servants, the children, you know, the how you say, the women who are basically just engaged in taking care of the children, either they're pregnant or just given birth to children. Those who are, you know, invalid or cannot work, or the elderly, they'll all get. Then if there's a shortage, that will come on the grihastha, it won't come on someone else. Modern thing, it'll come on the servants or someone else. No, it comes on the grihastha himself, because he's supposed to take care of all the others. Right? So the others will see that they're fed. Servants, then they'll be set aside. You know, because they'll eat after they've cleaned and done everything anyway. But their share is set aside. Once everybody's taken care of, then the householder will eat.
I was thinking, normally when Krishna helps us in some way, then we get overwhelmed and we thank him so much. But in the case of Avarish Maharaj, when the Sudarshan comes, we don't really see him being overwhelmed or thanking the Lord. We don't see any prayers there. I just feel a lot of protection.
What we see in the beginning, this is what was special about Ambarish Maharaj, is that he didn't pray for protection. when Durvasa Muni created the demon, then Ambarish didn't pray to the Lord for his protection. Right? He just depended upon the Lord, whatever the Lord wanted. If he wanted that this is how he was going to leave, then that would be it. Because of that surrender, then the Lord took care. Like that. And then he offered prayers to Sudarshan, and afterwards. So he understood it was the Lord's. Because he's not wanting someone from the Lord. He's a great devotee. This is ninth canto, so we're beyond the basically devotional activities performed from karma and yama. Right, with Prahlad Maharaj, then we have pure devotional service, Ambarish, pure devotional service. So this is the mood of the pure devotee. So pure devotee, there's no karma or jnana. But that's not their motive. So therefore, he doesn't approach the Lord for getting out of a distress, artha, or for wealth, artharti, or for gaining knowledge, jigyasu. Right? He just wants to please the Lord. He's not even a jnani who just wants to know the Lord. He just wants to serve the Lord, so he's gone beyond that. So he's come to the pure platform, like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
When the understanding that happened, we're talking about tolerating justice.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you also hear people say that it's simple just to allow other people to abuse a person or
it means drawing a line on these things of justice and injustice. It depends on if it's to you or to someone who is a dependent of yours. If there's someone who's a dependent or someone who is, within your sphere of relationship, then you would, if you had the ability, you would work to try to correct that, if it's possible. But if it's to you, then generally one has a tendency to avoid that. Like that. That's for you personally. You have to see if that will affect the service, and if you've been given some order to do some service, then it's a fine line. You have to be very, very honest to see that what you're saying, is it about you, or is it about the position? Is the temple president telling the younger devotee that they have to properly respect authority, because if they don't respect authority, then the spiritual life will be 100% useless? Or is it because they themselves want respect? Right? So the individual has to honestly look at it. Why is that said? Because it's true. If they don't respect the authorities, there's no question of spiritual life. They might as well go home. Because no use to them being in Krishna consciousness. You can't accept authority and respect authority, then you won't respect anyone, including God, because he's the ultimate authority. He's been in, the temple president and others have been empowered by Krishna's process, not by another process. So therefore, if they can't respect, then they're in the wrong movement. And even in the material world, they're in the wrong cosmic creation. Unfortunately, there's only this one, so I don't know where they're going. But even in this world, without respect, you don't get anywhere. No one gets anywhere. And even the roughest guys on the street, the main thing is respect. And these are the worst, scummiest people. And if you don't properly respect, then they can't tolerate it. So, therefore, one has to look, why did I say that? And if it was because of our own motivation, though what we said was true, then we have to work to try to correct that in ourselves. So therefore, this is the difference between those who lead and those who follow. Those who follow need to be told what to do. Those who lead have to be able to be self-inspired. They have to be able to be self-disciplined. Of course, we always have our superiors, so therefore then there's always someone to correct us. But the point is that is the sign of maturity, is that you yourself can correct yourself. And if you can't, then that's not considered mature. Like that. Like an adult knows what to do, what not to do. Therefore, they're correcting the children, which don't know what to do.
But if they don't know what to do and what not to do, they can't correct themselves, and they won't be able to correct the children, and therefore then they're not mature, you know. Does that make sense? So therefore you always have this dual thing happening at once. Therefore, cintaveda-veda-tattva. Two things, completely incongruous, happening at the same time, and you have to be able to make them work. Otherwise, then devotional service will always be a mystery. Even the material world will be a mystery. But especially devotional service will be a mystery. You know, how can he, why is he so proud he's telling everybody they should, you know, follow what he says? It's just devotional service. But the same time is, he has to understand it's not him. It's the position has to be followed. Then as a soul, they're just like everybody else. The same temple president yesterday, when he wasn't, was one of the temple devotees. Tomorrow, when someone else is the temple president, he's just one of the temple devotees. So it's not the soul. It's the position. The position carries the Lord's potency. So therefore, one can't be proud like that. So this is the thing. You know, a parent is proud that they're the parent, and they're telling that to the kid. Anybody who's a good parent will say that this parent doesn't know what they're doing. Right? Like this. They have to invoke that. But at the same time, it has to be invoked. The parent isn't the authority. There is no parental rasa. There is no rasa. So if we get rid of all authority in this, then where's the rasa? Right? Husband submissive to wife. There's a particular husband to the wife, wife to the husband, parent to the children to the parent, friends to friends, servant to master. Neutrality means you appreciate the qualities. So we remove authority, you remove rasa, and all you establish is impersonalism. Though the concept of this philosophy is that then you're establishing real relationships, real caring and all this. It's a trick. It's a bad trick of Maya. It's an impersonal concept. You remove authority, you remove rasa. And you remove rasa, then you have nothing. Therefore, the modern culture, the contemporary culture, is just cats and dogs biting each other. There is no interaction, there's no care, there's nothing. Some seeming care is there, here and there you can find. But the philosophy that it's based on doesn't care. So therefore, it's only a time that it gets less and less. You find less and less people who actually care. Less and less people who have good relationships. You know? Less and less people who accept authority. Okay? Yes, last question.
A large non-devotee academic looking at the story of the Vishnu and others probably think that the Lord sometimes creates a situation which affects the devotee, you know, which highlights the Lord's potency. Does the Lord need to highlight his potency? If he's a supreme Lord, he has all power and so on. Why does he need to highlight
this
situation?
Okay. It's a nice point coming from a devotee. An academic would never notice this. The point you've asked, the academic would not have any entrance into this point. They wouldn't catch this point because they're unqualified. So, therefore, you don't have to worry that an academic would notice this point. This is a fine point. This is a fine point of devotional reciprocation. The karmis have no entrance, they don't know. They don't even know who they are, let alone anything else. How do they know this point? This is a point being pointed out by Bhagavatam itself. And then within that, then in the purport, Prabhupada's pointed out more. So only the devotees can understand. So the karmis have no entrance. Academics don't know these things.
Huh.
Well, the question was is, now if an academic, a Western academic, Karmi academic, then they seeing this, that in this pastime the Lord's potency is being highlighted here. So what is the need? Why should the Lord highlight his own potencies? You know, isn't he satisfied enough being God already? Why does he have to, you know, rub it in everyone's face? You know? But the point is that it will not be able to be understood by the karmis. They wouldn't understand this point. That's why Bhagavatam is not a place of study. Closest they get generally to the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature is technical stuff. They'll get the Sandarbhas, they'll get to some other technical points. You know, anything that's technical, that's external, that they can catch. But these subtle internal points of the fine points of the eternal religion, they can't enter it. They can't know it even exists. Durvasa Muni from this went away knowing that the glories of the Lord of the devotees are great. He didn't become a devotee. He was just impressed that the power of the bhakti yogis is greater than the astanga yogis. And he went to Brahmaloka to talk to them about it, because only they would really appreciate it. You know, because they could get into fine technical, because they're the most powerful of all. You know, all the yogis are there. Is the yogis, then they go from here over the Shishumara and go to Brahmaloka. And then they wait there until Brahma leaves his body, then they go with him. So it would be full of the most powerful yogis. So he's gone there to discuss with them. You know, hey, check these guys out. You know? So the academics wouldn't be able to. You know, that's one side. The other side is that the Lord's potency, it's there. You know, there, it's there in a relationship. Just like something's happened. Okay, this, that, and something's happened. You come there and something special has happened and you wonder how this happened, and then you look around the room and then one person over in the corner kind of like smiles and winks at you. So now did that impose upon you their power of their arrangements and all this and creating that you felt exploited and all this kind of thing? Or it enhanced the relationship and the taste? Which did it do? You were happy that this whole thing came about. You don't know who did it. No one else knows who did it. One person in the room, by a very slight, subtle thing, reveals that they did it. So does that create a bond, deepens the relationship between you? Or it separates you because now you're the victim of their, you know, imposing, you know, managerial, organizational skills that they have controlled you in this way and caused you to be happy for their own devious purposes. Right? Which is
The closest one.
Yeah, so therefore, what's the point of him? He means, all there is the Lord's potencies. We're a Lord, we're a potency of the Lord. There's only, that's all there is. Anything we know is potency. God's something else. He's something different. He's not potency. He's the source of potency. He doesn't even calculate in our ability to understand. We being potency can understand potency. We cannot understand what is God. God's something else. He's a different entity that has, where there's no way we can understand what is God. Right? We're energy, we can understand energy. But we can't understand what is the source of energy. Can electricity understand a generator? No, but electricity can understand a light bulb, a fan, a this, a that, you know, things that relate with the electricity. They can't relate to the generator. So therefore, we only know. There's only. So the show of potencies is the only way of reciprocation between God and the living entities, and one living entity and another living entity. It's only through potencies. There is no other meaning. You understand? So when you get that fine, then that's, it disappears into this, right? That's all. You? Okay. So we'll end here. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanda Gopala Premananda ki.